Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 0.035% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching never changed anything.
Okay, welcome to another installment of It's My House, and today's podcast is titled Your Business Needs a Sales Team. Your business needs a sales team. And fourth, this week has been kind of challenging. As far as some glitches here on Blog Talk Radio. Okay. All right. While we're trying to straighten out our audio again, I'd like to give you guys, all right. We're going to play the first 20 hours. If you want to get to learn anything, it's in the first 20 hours, and then we'll be right back with. Matter of fact, this applies to what we're doing here. Today's podcast, Your Business Needs a Sales Team, 619-768-2945. If you want to learn how to build a sales team, you can learn how to do it in 20 hours.
Hi, everyone. 2 years ago, my life changed forever. My wife, Kelsey, and I welcomed our daughter, Leela, into the world. Now, becoming a parent is an amazing, amazing experience. Your whole world changes overnight, and all of your priorities change immediately, so fast that it makes it really difficult to process sometimes. Now, you also have to learn a tremendous amount about being a parent. Like, for example, how to dress your child. This was new to me. This is an actual outfit. I thought this was a good idea. And even Leela knows that it's not a good idea. So there was so much to learn and so much craziness all at once. And to add to the craziness, Kelsey and I both work from home. We're entrepreneurs. We run our own businesses. So Kelsey is develops courses online for yoga teachers. I'm an author. And so I'm working for home. Kelsey's working for home. We have an infant, and we're trying to make sure that everything gets done that needs done. And life is really, really, really busy. And a couple weeks into this amazing experience, when the sleep deprivation really kicked in, like around week 8, I had this thought, and it was the same thought that parents across the ages, internationally, everybody has had this thought, which is, I am never going to have free time ever again. And somebody said it's true. Yeah, it's not exactly true, but it feels really, really true in that moment. And this was really disconcerting to me, because one of the things that I enjoy more than anything else is learning new things, getting curious about something and diving in and fiddling around and learning through trial and error and eventually becoming pretty good at something. And without this free time, I didn't know how I was ever going to do that ever again. And so I'm a big geek. I want to keep learning things. I want to keep growing. And so what I decided to do was go to the library and go to the bookstore and look at what research says about how we learn and how we learn quickly. And I read a bunch of books, I read a bunch of websites, and trying to answer this question, how long does it take to acquire a new skill? You know what I found? 10,000 hours. Anybody ever heard this? 10,000, it takes 10,000 hours. If you want to learn something new, if you want to be good at it, it's going to take 10,000 hours to get there. And I read this in book after book and website after website, and my mental experience of reading all of this stuff was like, no! I don't have time. I don't have 10,000 hours. I am never going to be able to learn anything new ever again. But that's not true. So 10,000 hours, just to give you a rough order of magnitude, 10,000 hours is a full-time job for 5 years. That's a long time. And we've all had the experience of learning something new, and it didn't take us anywhere close to that amount of time, right? So what's up? There's something kind of funky going on here. What the research says and what we expect and have experiences, they don't match up. And what I found... Thank you.
knocking at the door. I'm looking at my girlfriend, she's passed out on the floor. I've seen so many things I ain't never seen before. Don't know what it is, I don't wanna see no more.
Mama told me not to come.
And today's podcast is titled, Your Business Needs a Sales Team. Your Business Needs a Sales Team. 619-768-2945 is the call-in live stream number. You have a lot of people out here that have, well, they're self-employed with whatever they're selling, whatever their business might, well, whatever their whatever they're servicing or whatever widget they're producing. And typically, they're wearing a bunch of hats. You know, like say if you got a drywall company, you might be the technician. You might be the drywaller. You also are the accountant, the bookkeeper, and you're also the salesperson. But if you organize, you can earn more money selling your widget or whatever your product or service is if you have a sales team. Now, a couple of entrepreneurs, at least, well, out of the entrepreneurs that three of the entrepreneurs that we've featured recently, at least this week, which one was 2 days ago. Annie Turnbull Malone, hair care, black hair care industrialist. She made up her own products, but there's a lot of people then as well as now that made up their own products on their kitchen table, in their garage or whatever. So what distinguished Annie Turnbull Malone, Madam C.J. Walker, Sarah Spencer Washington Spencer, something like that, or the people that run IBM, Xerox, you name it? They've got a sales team. Now, that word sell, S-E-L-L, or sale, is intimidating to a lot of people. They say, I can't sell. I have a whole different philosophy on that. I believe that real selling is teaching. If you block that word out of your vocabulary, sell, selling, sales, and concentrate on building a relationship and educating your particular, so to speak, you can go a whole long, you can have some success with that. Well, in any event, the sales team that I'm organizing, sales and marketing team, actually, I don't even call them that. You know, I don't use the term account executive or nothing like that. My philosophy is Playtime first. So I'm organizing a social capital team or a party team where we take you through 20 hours of training, hands-on training, to do it the way we want to do it. So we're going to play some audio today on that because better way to get to learn about a person and what they need through a social setting. You're not trying to sell them anything. That is for Bolton the way I do things, okay? It's play time for us. We'll have game nights. We'll have movie nights. We'll have pizza parties, a bunch of social activities, basically to start to build relationships with people to find out about them so you can find out about us. And then somewhere down the line, there might be a sale. But so we're going to throw some audio on this just to get, you know, our philosophy out there on it.
Hey everyone, this is Stelly Efty with Close.io. In today's video, we're going to talk about the different types of designs that you can use to structure and organize your sales team. So last week, I was talking to a founder that was just at that phase where they needed to start hiring multiple salespeople, and they started worrying about how to organize their internal sales team, what kind of a organizational design to use to put together the sales team in order to do both the best in terms of the results they're driving, but also be the best cultural fit to the type of company they're trying to build. And this was not the first time that I had to talk about this, so I thought I'd share my ideas and some basic designs with you and to help you think about, you know, all the available options out there to organize your sales team. So as far as I can tell, there's three basic designs in order to organize salespeople within a startup. You either create islands, you either create assembly lines, or you create pods. Those are really the three different models that we're going to talk about. And there's pros and cons to each and every one of these approaches. So it will depend on what you're trying to accomplish if one of them or none of them is really right for you. So let's go through them really quickly. The first model is what I call the island. Another framework to use would be kind of hunters and gatherers. The basic idea here is that everybody does everything, and there's no real organizational structure other than that every single individual, every single sales rep has to do everything within their sales process themselves. So they have to do lead generation themselves, they have to generate leads on their own, they have to reach out to these leads, prospect them, qualify them, and close them. They have to do everything on their own. Typically, these types of sales organizations where every single salesperson just does everything and is responsible for everything, they tend to be a bit more aggressive. They tend to be in more established markets where, you know, there's very high margins, but there's also tons of competition and very little differentiation. So real estate is an example that comes to mind. A lot of financial services industries operate in those types of sales models where every single rep is kind of their own little business and they have to take care of everything on their own. And they're really elbows out competing with everyone, not just with other companies, but everyone within their own company. So that structure has pros and cons, right? The pros are that you have to do very little management on a one-by-one basis, right? You operate under the premise that every single person is kind of their own entrepreneur. They have to take care of business themselves. You provide them with some basic things, usually back-end services. You offer them a product range they can sell. You offer them a certain commission structure. You offer them some guidance and some training. But then really everybody is on their own and what they do. So those are whatever if you want to call it the pros. But the cons of that is obviously that it creates a very, very aggressive environment. It tends to lead to, you know, not necessarily a unified experience for the customer. So, you know, depending on the salesperson, the customer is going to have a completely different experience on your brand and your company and the way you represent it. And it leads to high levels of churn within your sales organization. So there's going to be tons of people coming into the door and tons of people leaving immediately. So you're going to have very high churn in terms of your sales team and sales organization. This type of sales structure is not usually good for startups, right? For obvious reasons. But it's one available design and one very popular design, especially back in the day. The second way of designing and organizing your sales team is what I call the assembly line, right? And this is basically where you take each step of the sales process and the sales funnel and you create specialized teams that focus on that step in the funnel and then they pass on the customer to the next step in the next team. So one very popular thing to do nowadays is to have an SDR team, a sales development representative team, which is just a fancy title or name for prospectors, right? People that are just responsible to go out there and prospect. You can have a lead generation team. These are the people that get the data, the phone numbers, the names of people to reach out to. You can have prospectors, people that reach out and communicate to these leads and try to qualify them. And then they pass on to the AE team, the account executives, the sales reps, that then take these qualified leads. They have appointments and they, you know, call these people on those appointments or visit them, and their job is to close. And then typically in today's startups, they pass it on to a customer success team, which is then responsible to take that new customer and make sure that they're successful, which also means that they're going to stay much longer being a paying customer and hopefully upgrade and spend more and more money with us, so increase the customer lifetime value of that customer over time. So you go from lead gen to qualifying to closing to helping on the success side or to account management, whatever you want to call that. And you have different teams that are highly specialized on each stage, and the customer's experiences that they're passed on from one team to the next or from one individual to the next, and every single individual being a specialist at what they do. So the assembly line as an organizational structure has pros and cons, right? What are some of the pros? The pros are typically that you can, because you can highly specialize, you can create killer teams and teams that are really, really good and teams that are pushing each other to becoming better and better, whether you have some level of competition, but it's within the same team. And, you know, if you're a sales rep, you're compared with other sales rep that get similar high-quality leads, high-quality opportunities on their lab, and you can learn from people within the team. And you make sure that each step of the funnel, you create the best possible team around it. You have the best practices, and you coach and train to get better and better and better at it. And the other thing that's cool about this organizational structure is that it creates a lot of predictability in your business. Because you are segmenting each step, you can easily identify what does the lead generation team need to do to give the qualifying team what they need, what does the qualifying team need to do to give the sales reps what they need, what do we need to do to generate the funnel and generate the results we want. And when things go wrong, it's very easy or much easier to identify typically where the problem lies. Is it a lead generation problem? Is it a qualifying problem? Is it a closing problem? Right? You can look at these individual teams and the numbers they generate and predict what's going to happen in the future or identify their issues much easier. So that's the beauty of that. Obviously, there's some challenges when you start off with a very small team, right, where you have two people. You can have like five different teams in your sales rep, in your sales organization. So in that case, you have to be a little creative and still specialize, but, you know, specialize just in two big steps, right? And you have one person doing all the, you know, lead gen and qualifying. You have one person closing and account management. And then as you hire more people, you specialize more in detail and in depth. But that's the assembly line model. And then the third model is the pod model. And the pod model is still utilizing these specialist roles. So you have an SDR, you have an account executive, and you might have a customer success rep. But instead of having these large teams of these specialized roles, you create little pods of these specialized roles. And these pods are responsible for the entire journey of that customer and for a certain number of customer accounts. So you would have a team that would be put together of, like, let's say two SDRs, three SDRs, two account executives, and one customer success rep, right? And these six people would create one pod, and they would work together from winning the customer to keeping them and making them happy, and they're responsible for the entire experience of the customer, and they're just one very, very close-knit group, and you can build multiple pods, right? And these pots now compete against each other, not just the SDRs against the other SDRs, but now it's this team that's responsible for both winning new customers but keeping them and keeping them happy and successful versus other teams. And you could specialize these pods, right? You could have pods for certain countries, industries, verticals, different sizes of customer accounts. So you can go wild with that. But the basic idea is that you create these small teams, these small pods of specialist roles, and they go out there and they figure things out, right? Another paradigm or another metaphor is that the assembly line, the assembly line kind of team works more like a large army of specialists, and the pods are more like kind of these small guerrilla units, right? Very small teams, a few specialists in each role, and they all go out there on a mission to create, you know, very successful and happy customers. The pod model has pros and cons as well. So the pros are that typically what you get out of pods is a much higher awareness for the entire experience of the customer, right? If I work very closely in a close-knit team with the SDR, the account executive, and the success person, we kind of get that we need to, I don't have to just to care about my own step in the entire process, but I also have to care a lot about what comes before me and what happens after me, right? And I want my team to win, so I care about the lead gen people winning as well as the success person winning, because we're all one team. I don't just care about my sales numbers being great or my lead generation numbers being great. So it creates a higher level of empathy, a higher level of understanding, typically a lot less friction in the communication and in the passing on to information, because the team understands each other a lot better and works with each other a lot closer. But the downside of it is that typically these people individually have less opportunities to grow because there's less competition, right? If we are only two SDRs in this team, we're not going to really push each other to our best. I'm not going to have as much training on the SDR side of things as I might have an understanding of the entire customer journey. So I become less of a specialist in my own role, but I become I have a much better general understanding of what's going on, and I understand all the other roles that touch the customer a lot better. So, you know, it really depends on your culture if the pod model is a better one or not. A lot of times pods are a really good model for startups because they're less aggressive, less competitive, much more cohesive in the entire experience that they offer the customer. So it's something that a lot of startups are gravitating towards. But also, it depends on your industry, right? If you're competing against very aggressive industries and companies that really know what they're doing and sales teams that are assembly lines that are really well run, it's going to be hard for you to compete on a pod model sometimes. So you need to ask yourself, what kind of a team are we? What is the culture that we want to create? But then also, let's look at our competitors. Let's look at our market. How are they organized? Because if all the companies in your market that are crushing it are organized in a very specific way, it doesn't mean that you have to do that too, but it's worth asking the question why they do that. And if they tried the pod model versus the assembly line model versus the island model, and if there were really good and rational reasons why they chose one over the other. So you want to do a little bit of analysis of what's going on in the market, as well as do some introspection and asking yourself, who do we want to be? What is a good cultural fit for us? What is authentic to the type of people we are and we want to hire? And then choose your model. But those are the three models, very simple. Either everybody does everything on their own, is responsible from A to Z to deliver on their own as salespeople, or you create these specialized teams that pass on the customer from one team to the next, or you create little pods of specialists that are responsible for the customer experience in kind of a unified way. I hope this was useful, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on the benefits and, you know, some of the risks that you see with each of these models. I'd love to hear your experience on how you have put together these models or how the sales team is organized within your startup. So if you have any thoughts, I'd love to hear them in the comment section. Make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, as well as to go to blog.close.io and subscribe to our blog, and I'll hear you and see you very soon. Go crush it.
And today's podcast is titled, Your Business Needs a Sales Team. Your Business Needs a Sales Team. And he just laid down his three basic models for a sales and marketing team. You can do the solo act, you can organize an assembly team, or you can organize it in pods. We'll go through more of that later. Some people might like the small get-together or party approach. You know, they're different type of parties. So let's wait a minute. Okay. This audio here is basically how to organize a party in a small place.
Hi, my name is Andrea Corielli, celebrity caterer and owner of Elegant Affairs. Today we're talking about throwing a large party in a small space. If you have a small space and you're worried you're not going to have enough room for your party, here are some really great tips. First, take a look at how the room is laid out. If you have couches that are in the center of the room or any furniture that can be moved against the walls, that's your best bet. The name of the game here is to make as much open space as possible. Now, when guests first come into a party, where is the first place they're going to go? And that is the bar. So wherever the bar is going to be, you want to make sure that you have a nice open space around it, because people have a tendency to go get a drink and they stand 2 or 3 feet away from the bar. Now, instead of cluttering up the entire bar with tons of alcohol and sodas and juices and ice, I suggest you come up with a signature cocktail bar. So choose one or two great signature vodka drinks, as well as glassware, maybe a sign with those signature cocktail drinks, and that way you are condensing the bar. Maybe have some wine, a signature cocktail, some glassware, and you're ready to go. When it comes to food, you want to avoid the guests having to sit down with a fork and a knife. So what you should really do is make lots of food, grazing food, and put it all over the space, on the coffee tables, on the counters, anywhere that you can find a space. And if you want, instead of putting out 10-inch dinner plates, put out 7-inch dinner plates. Some items that you could absolutely serve are these fun chips. These are homemade beet chips, which are fabulous, and they're very, very different. Using a jumbo martini glass or any other kind of glass vessel is a really good idea, because you can fit lots of food in these small vessels and place them anywhere. The same thing with these tomato and mozzarella bites. These tomato and mozzarella bites are fabulous. They're bite-sized. Instead of having a big platter of tomato and mozzarella where people have to take a fork and a knife and cut it, these are on a miniature fork already. You just pop them in your mouth and you are ready to go. So, just to recap, set a signature bar, move the furniture against the walls to make an open space, and put food everywhere, lots of food, grazing food. Little tea sandwiches, tomato mozzarella bites, chips and glass vessels. Even do a carving of filet mignon and turkey and have rolls on the side with a little bowl of accompaniment on the side so they can make their own sandwiches. Be creative. I'm Andrea Corielli for Elegant Affairs, and you're watching eHow.com.
Okay, that's what I recommend. Of course, you do it the way you want to, but like with a social event, once again, the way we're using it is we're basically doing awareness and education through social activities. We want to build up relationships. So you might something just popped. I got to go check on it. Let me put on some music.
Yeah.
Today's podcast is titled "Your Business Needs a Sales Team," and the way we're doing it is basically we don't even call them salespeople. We're organizing playtime teams because we want to build the relationships first and foremost. You do that, and then everything else, at least in my philosophy, will take care of itself. Next thing is, you want to take advantage of social, well, they're different type of media. Social media works for a lot of people. Other forms of media might work better. But, you know, since we're in the social media age, let's get some information on using social media to advance your, to help move your product or service.
You know you need to be on social media. YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, some of the most popular sites out there on the web. Even Snapchat, even though Instagram's crushing it, it's still doing really well. They have over 100 million active users daily. But as a beginner, all of this is overwhelming and complicated. So how do you start? Hey everyone, I'm Neil Patel, and today I'm gonna share with you how to get started with social media as a beginner. The first thing you need to do is pick the right social network. Yes, there's a lot of them, whether it's Facebook, whether it's LinkedIn, whether it's Twitter. It's up to you on which network you want to be on. You could be on all of them, but if you're on all of them, you're not going to spend enough time to make these profiles amazing. You don't want to half-ass them. In other words, you don't want to be on LinkedIn and do a mediocre job. You don't want to be on Facebook and do a mediocre job. It's better to not be on them than it is to do a mediocre job, because doing a mediocre job will get you no reach. I kid you not. Social media 5-6 years ago was way easier to leverage to get traffic from. Nowadays, their algorithms are so strict because there's so much competition, they're looking for the cream of the crop. In other words, if you're not the best of the best, you're not going to do well. So you need to pick the right social network. And what's right for me may not be right for you. So the way you pick the social network is look at what space you're in. If you're in B2B, the chances are LinkedIn is going to be the best social network for you. Twitter is also another good social network for B2B, but LinkedIn typically is better. If you're in B2C, Facebook does really well, Instagram does really well, YouTube does really well. Funny enough, YouTube works for both B2B and B2C. Now here's the thing, you also have to look at what content type do you like creating. Are you someone who's really good with videos? If so, you probably want to start with YouTube or LinkedIn. Facebook's much more competitive. YouTube, you can get the longevity. Even if you don't have an audience, you don't have a subscriber pool, you can get more traffic over time because Facebook, people don't really search on there. YouTube, people perform searches all day long for videos. And your videos can continually get views if you rank higher. If you're going after an older demographic, Facebook is amazing. If you're going after a younger demographic, Instagram and Snapchat are amazing. So now that you have a rough idea of which social network to go after, and if you're still unsure, just leave a comment below, tell me your business, and I'll help answer the question for you so that way you're using the right social network from day one. But now that you have a right one, the second thing you need to do is start creating content. Yes, you're like, hey, I have no friends, I have no following. Doesn't matter, no one's gonna follow you if you don't have any content. So start creating content. That starts off with completing your profile. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all of them, they have profiles. You need to complete everything from a username to your email address to a really proper, nice image to a description of who you are or your company. If you don't complete your profile, you're not giving people a reason to follow. And when you're completing your profile, talk about the benefits that people are going to experience from following you or subscribing to your page. But as I mentioned, it's all about creating content. So it starts with the profile and then it gets to content. If you're not sure what content to create, you need to check out your competition. You all have competitors. Even if you're in a new space, like let's say you're Uber and you're revolutionizing the taxi industry, well, your competition would be the taxi industry. So you look at what is my competition doing on social media. Now I know Uber's already around, they're a multi-billion dollar company, but I'm giving you an example on if I was creating Uber from day one, that would be my competition. You would look at your closest competitors. It could be indirect competition, but still your closest competitors. You want to see what content's doing for well for them and what content's not. That'll give you an idea of what you should do more of and what you shouldn't do as much of. If you don't know how to create content, it could be as simple as status updates, you pulling out your phone, recording a video of you, sharing some links. And if you're not sure what links to share, you can go to buzzsumo.com, type in any keywords from your industry. It'll show you all the popular articles that shows you what people like on Facebook, Twitter, all the social sites, which will then give you an idea of what kind of content will resonate with that social network and what doesn't. Now that you're creating content, the next thing you need to do is build a connection. And you need to build a connection with people. It's a social network. Just because you're on a computer doesn't mean you're not connecting with humans. So make sure you're friending all the people that you know, following them, you're engaging, right? You're building connections. So if it's your friend already, like someone that you know in person, you can just invite them to friend you on Facebook or follow you on Twitter. If it's someone you don't know, you're gonna have to work more to build that connection. And here's how you do this. You go and look for all the people in your space who are putting status updates, posts. If they have questions, respond to them, help them out. If they have articles, feel free and share them if you think they're valuable, right? You can repost, reshare, whatever it may be. If there's other people on these channels, fan pages that are related to your industry, even if it's your competitors, and they're asking questions, you can respond to them, help them out. That's how you build a connection. Even when you're posting on your own page, when someone responds with a question or a comment, you should acknowledge that they're there. Thank them for leaving a comment. Respond when they have a question. That's how you engage. And what I found is over time, as you engage, what you'll see is a lot of people will come back over to your site, they'll follow you, you'll engage deeply with them, and they'll become a loyal, diehard follower. It's not just about growing your number and having 1,000 followers or 10,000 followers, which then gets me into my last tip. And the last tip is don't go for follower count. It's all about having valuable connections, personal ones. Because if your first 100 fans or followers aren't that engaged with you, all these social networks have it in their algorithm, but they're looking at a percentage. So if you have 1 million fans but only 1,000 engaged, they're like, whoa, this is a terrible engagement rate. We shouldn't show your content to anyone because no one likes it. But if you had 100 followers and every single one liked it, shared it, and commented, they did all three of those things, social networks like Facebook are going to be like, this content's amazing. It needs to go viral because everyone loves it. So it's not about having the most amount of fans. It's about having the most amount of engaged fans. If someone's not going to engage, you don't want them. Don't just pay models to talk about you so you can get more followers. It's about having the most relevant diehard fans. And I know, as I said, that was going to be the last tip, but here's one more bonus tip for you. Don't push people to your business from day one. Within 3 months or 6 months, by all means, you can start talking about your business, slowly mentioning it, try to get people over to your site and as customers. You can do simple things like just sharing a link. But you don't want to do that from day one. Why would you want to promote your business when no one's following you? They're not engaged. If you went up to a random stranger on the street and you said, hey, my name is John. I know that you buy toilet paper because everyone uses toilet paper. Would you like to buy my toilet paper? They're going to be like, you're crazy. Who are you? We don't want to buy anything for you. You need to build a connection. No one's going to buy from you until you build that relationship. So don't promote your business until 3 to 6 months. I'm to the extreme in which I like waiting 9 months to a year. But again, you can do it within 3 to 6 months. If you're doing advertising from day one, you can promote your business instantly. But if you're trying to build up everything organically, you can't promote your business from day one. So that's it. If you're still confused on how to get started with social media, leave a comment below. I'll answer it. I'll help you out. If there's anything I can do to help you, just let me know. I truly am here to help you succeed. Thank you for watching. Please comment, share, like, and tell other people about this video.
Okay, I think, excuse me. I think I've played, no. We got one more audio on how to pay your sales and marketing team.
Hey everyone, it's Neil Patel here for another Q&A Thursday video. I'm here with Adam LaDolce from Viewership.
Hello, everybody.
And this week's question is...
This one's from Jason Valasek. I think we've seen a couple other questions from him in the past, so thank you, Jason. And if you want to be featured like this, leave a comment right there below with your question. We'll answer it. So he's dying to hear our thoughts on what compensation structure looks like for commission salespeople versus task-oriented people and how to blend in 1099 contractors.
Sure. So with commission-based salespeople, typically the best salespeople are the ones who get a base. Yes, you can do commission only. If you're in the United States, you can find a ton of amazing commission-only salespeople based out of Utah. As they say, if you can sell religion, you can sell anything. That's what the saying goes in sales. And that's why you're seeing a lot of companies go to Utah to run their sales team, from like the Adobes of the world to the Salesforces of the world. I didn't come up with that saying. That's just what I learned from some of these guys. And that's what they told me, like, Utah's one of the best places to go find amazing sales.
Because they're Mormons, right?
They're Mormon. And they'll go door to door.
Yeah.
And they do it for free.
Yeah.
Right? Because they're believing in the cause. So if you can find some of those hungry people to sell your products or services, the chances are, because they have amazing work ethic, they'll do well too. But what I found in general is, if you pay your salespeople a base, they're much better off than if you only pay them commission only. Mm-hmm. So look for salespeople that are experienced, they're hungry, not too experienced, and when you look at their base plus commission, in general, when you look at your whole sales department, because there's other costs, there's a VP of sales, there may be a sales director, you may have some of your fulfillment people or other people within the organization having to help the salespeople close some deals. In general, whatever you're closing in revenue, sales should not cost you more than 10%. If it starts costing you more than that, it's just going to eat away a lot of your margins, which means you won't be able to provide amazing results or invest as much in products or services.
I have a question, just 10% of lifetime value of the customer or 10% of initial deal?
We look at it as 10% of the first year's deal.
I see.
Venture-funded companies are a bit more flexible. I've seen some of them go up to like 20, 30%. I'm talking for all of you guys who are bootstrapping and trying to make it out yourself, because you need to have a self-sustaining business model that works well. For example, if you look at Domo right now, they went public, their stock got hammered. A company that once had a billion-plus valuation, if I'm not mistaken, and at least based on the day from when I'm recording the video, they're worth in the hundreds of millions of dollars. Why is their valuation down? Their expenses are too high. You're in business, whether you like it or not, to also make a profit. And I'm not saying you shouldn't pay people well, because you have to keep in mind, without the people on your team, you will not have your business. The people on your team will determine how good or big of a company you build. Elon Musk doesn't build Tesla, it's all the people around him. Yes, he's smart, but it's the team that has helped him get to where he is, more than just himself. Right? And I learned that from Richard Branson. We were speaking at a conference together, and he's like, it's all about your team. You're not going to build anything big without an amazing team. So pay them well. That's why I recommend you don't do commission only. You pay them a base. They're much higher quality sales reps. And in general, your total compensation for your whole sales department should be around 10%. If it's lower than that, increase it. Treat them right. If it's higher than that, you need to figure things out. Because you need to invest in product, support, engineering, software, what other divisions you have, and still have a healthy profit margin so you can take that money, provide amazing perks to your team members, and of course, you can also use that cash to expand more, dump it into marketing and grow.
Right.
So that's how I look at sales. As it comes to other tasks, I don't really look at it as, hey, here's how I pay my contractors, here's how much it should be. I look at it as like, all right, let me go to sites like Upwork. I know a lot of people say Upwork sucks. It's because most people hire Upwork just based on they don't have enough completed jobs. They don't look at their success ratio. They're not looking at all the reviews. They're not talking to them and pre-screening them and being picky enough. It's not about just getting the cheapest people on Upwork. It's about getting the people who are qualified, and you're getting a good bang for your buck. So you need to look at quality and price and have some sort of balance there. And just make sure that whatever you're paying, it's worth it for you. And then after a while, it may get so expensive, you're like, wait, if I just hired someone full-time, it would be cheaper. And that's when you need to start moving people into, you know, being in-house within your office versus just being virtual and contractors.
Definitely. And just one note I've seen with hiring contractors and hiring employees is it's less necessarily about the money, because the psychology of money is more so, yes, people are happy if they're not happy if they're not making enough money. But once they make a certain amount of money, more money doesn't necessarily make them more motivated, right? So you can actually sometimes overpay people to an extent where it doesn't even motivate them to do more. People more so want to feel like they're a part of something, a part of the organization. Neil has talked a lot about passion the past couple of days, and I've got a lot out of that. He said, right? Hire people who are passionate, who are excited about what you're doing, and that's what really matters. So I just wanted to kind of like chime in on that point, because I thought that was a big idea that I took from this week.
And I can't take credit for that. That came from Steve Jobs. He always said, when you're hiring people, it's not about hiring people who have the best resume. It's about hiring people who are hustlers, like people who just hustle hard and get stuff done, and are passionate. Because if someone's passionate, they're willing to put in the time, the energy, the hours, whatever it takes to succeed and accomplish their goals. And they'll be there for the long haul versus someone who's just going to keep hopping around every, you know, 6 months or every year looking for a new job. So that's it for this week's Q&A Thursday video. Thank you guys for watching. If you have a question, leave a comment below. We may answer it next week. Either way, I'll respond to it and answer it. Again, thank you. Make sure you subscribe, like, share, comment, tell other people about the video. Appreciate you guys watching.
And, you know, just as I was listening to these audios, in today's podcast is titled, Your Business Needs a Sales Team. Matter of fact, I'm going to write this aha moment for me. The friends that you make on social media through Twitter, just on Facebook alone, I would suggest organize meeting these people offline. If at all, have a Facebook party. If you're going out of town and you got some, you know, 5 or 10 or even 1 or 2 Facebook friends and it's wherever you're traveling, matter of fact, you hear me clicking because I'm, we, believe it or not, I don't know how many towns exist on the face of this earth, but in each and every one of those towns, which we will never visit in our entire lifetime or several lifetimes, we have friends in all those towns. The trick is we had to get to those towns. So I would, let me see, face. Yeah, so some type of, it could be If it's like a couple of people, you don't meet them for a meet and greet. Meet and greet. You don't know where it'll lead to. And that way your Facebook friends will become your real friends in reality. Matter of fact, yeah. This the banging you hear, that's what I picked up. So anyway, your business team, I mean, it's like, say, so whatever you're selling, whatever widget, whatever product, service, it could be music lessons, it could be oil changes, it could be sweet potato pies. Get a team out there. Factor it in as part of your profit. Build in that percentage in there where you have, and you'll actually make more money in the long run as well as short run, in my opinion. So every business needs a sales team. Now, like I say, I call my people something different. And I got a 20-hour system on training them hands-on, but matter of fact, starting next week, probably Monday, we're going to get into that because I'm organizing sales teams in multiple locations starting on Monday. Let's go to our phone lines. 773, your mic is open.
Well, good morning. You're right on point. I was off organizing some people that I want you to talk to in Detroit a few moments ago. And that sales team is what we're talking about doing for the year 2019 so that we can bump these radio talk shows together and have an online 24-hour service. I've been a part of that for about four years now. So that I was talking to Joy a few minutes ago, so offline I'll be talking to you and getting you guys acquainted. If you'd like to meet her so that you can see what page she's on, because I got her hooked up with the people that I have in California. So that would be four of us online. So we're all in the same places together.
Okay. All right. Now, for those of that don't know about your podcast, give us the name of your podcast, and when can we tune in? How can we can tune in?
Yeah, they some of them should be on tonight at 6 o'clock. I will be on the air at 6 o'clock, and the number is 516-387. We united with their families. So that's going to be the topic that we're going to be talking about. And that show starts at 6 p.m. Central Time.
Okay.
And when I want you to meet Joy before the show, we'll hook up a three-way conference call or something where we can all talk together and you can get to know what she's about, because I've been a part of that show for the last 4 years or better. Before I went to the first school. So I
and
think you'll like what they're doing.
What do you say the topic for tonight is?
The topic for tonight is reuniting the children with their families.
All right. This out of the foster care system or something?
Huh?
Out of the foster care system?
Yeah, out of that foster care system that Trump separated the children from the people that they call immigrants that's coming to America.
Okay. That should be an interesting podcast. And you see that's at 6 Central Time this evening?
Yeah, 6 Central Time this evening.
Okay. And you're doing these Monday through Friday. Okay. That's good. That's good. Let's see. So, like I say, Monday will be. I'm up here trying to. Yeah, we'll be giving more step-by-step information on how to organize a sales team if you don't already have a sales team for your particular business. And like I say, if historically, Madam CEO, I mean, look, matter of fact, if you look at the Fortune 500, basically what made those companies into Fortune 500 companies, I'm saying is their sales team.
Yeah.
You know, you got to have people out on the street promoting what you do.
That's right.
You know, like a lot of restaurants, well, it can go both ways. A lot of people that have restaurants started out as caterers. Or they might be a catering company and they have salespeople that what they do is they go out, they, you know, maybe get corporate accounts to people who need special event catering. They might partner up with event architects. So there's many ways you can do it. But like I say, in my opinion, your business will go to the next level if you have a sales team, somebody selling your products and services for you instead of you trying to do it all yourself. So on that note, that's it for today. Everyone have a good rest of the day and terrific weekend. All right, wait a minute. We're not going anywhere yet. you know what? Somebody just raised their hand. Okay. Well, I guess once they heard that music. All right, let me try to.
One in a Million, the history of Madam C.
Okay. Yeah, I think they're gone. Okay. All right, well, throw music because we didn't stop it quick enough.